Okay, hello and welcome to episode one of the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast, an actual play podcast for extended tabletop campaigns coming to you from London, England. I'm your host and game master, Alex Newell, and with me today we have...
James Ross.
Bryn Monroe.
Ben Meredith.
Lydia Nicholas.
And this is our first official proper episode.
Hooray!
It's only taken us 19 hours.
Look, technology's hard, like really difficult. For all the new listeners out there, because you can't not be, because it's the first episode, we're just going to basically play through a long campaign and record all, everything that's happening. Just to run through some things, what a tabletop RPG is for a start, because there's going to be some people who've never heard this before. It's collective storytelling, really. A group of people, it came from war games actually originally, where people would really, really, really like one of their individual characters and would want to give that character a bit more thing rather than like Troop 649227. And it kind of grew from that. And how it works is that we pretend to be a character. And as we sort of do things, we're rolling dice, or if we're fighting, we're rolling dice, just to determine the outcome so that it can be a bit fairer, things like that. So what will tend to happen is if you are, say, opening a door, you'll be rolling a dice, and there will be modifiers, which are worked out ahead of time in character creation, which just reflect how good you are at doing a thing. So if you are very good at opening locks, and there is a lock, you'll get, say, a +6. So you'll roll a dice just like anyone else would, but you will get a +6 because you are really good at that thing. So the way that these things will work out is they'll sort of be half scene, sort of people improving, riffing off, pretending to be their characters, talking to one another, and then half sort of fighting and things like that. And the other thing that can sometimes throw people is as the games master, I'm the one who's running it. Think of me as the PlayStation. I'm the guy who's churning out the NPCs and giving you quests, and I'm chucking things out. Basically.
Does that mean you suffer from planned obsolescence so we can upgrade you in 3 to 4 years?
Yes.
Yay!
Yes, it does.
Good.
But, so effectively, if you're going to think of it in those terms, I'm the one who's sort of generating the story world, but at no point do I control any of the characters, apart from if something specifically bad happens, you know, you get hit by something, I tell the players you have been hit by an arrow rather than, you know, you deciding to have been hit. You could if you want, but it's fairly... suicidal. The system we're using is the Pathfinder D20 system. It's an open source gaming system available totally legally at d20pfsrd.com. We'll put that in the link dump at the end so that you guys can basically click on that and go through. It's really amazing. They're doing good work. They took the sort of 3.5 gaming system for Dungeons and Dragons, and then they simplified it. They streamlined it. It's big. But it's open source, it's free to use, and I strongly recommend that you go on there and buy some of their more obscure books so that they can basically keep churning out the stuff that they do, because they're doing good work. And we're using it because, A, it's the system I'm most familiar with. I started on 3.5 and then moved on to Pathfinder. It's got a really broad scope, which is great because it allows us to do more things with the story, and it's free for all of you at home to actually follow along with. Because you can just access it and see what we're doing, and it'll all be there. The story world's original-ish. I wrote the story world, and it's not meant to tie into the Pathfinder canon in any way. So before anyone says that continent's not there, I know it's not in the Pathfinder world. A lot of it's going to be in London, which is a real place. So also, yes, I know my geography of London is wrong. Just roll with it. It's fictional.
So basically, assume that Alex is wrong.
There you go. Yeah, all right, let's go with that.
Wrong is another word for fiction.
Very literal, guys. But honestly, I'll always try to sort of put viewers in mind as to what the monsters were, but we'll be reskinning things a lot. So, you know, we'll be making things look a bit more story world appropriate. And if you want to keep up to date with how we're playing the game and the mechanics, do check out our Metacast. We've already recorded episode 0. There's going to be a bunch more, sort of talking about more how the maths of it works, leveling up, character creation, how you should go about building a backstory, things like that. They won't affect the story, so if you're just here to get your fix, you don't need to go into that stuff, but there's always someone who's interested in that kind of thing, and you should check out those if you want to know more. Our house rules as well are available at rustyquill.com. That's where all these podcasts are going to be available as well. So if you're thinking that I'm behaving a bit weirdly, it's all in there. I think rule one is that I'm right and you are wrong. I can't remember. You'll have to double check. Cool. Yeah. Okay, so without further ado, we'll get this started. Everybody ready?
Yes.
You ready, Bryn?
I was born ready.
Oh, good, good. Right. We start in the skies above London. It's not particularly smoggy or anything like that. There are huge shining brass roofs sort of spread out, and the city looks physically raised. You see that the Thames runs into it at one end, pretty much disappears, is underneath the profusion of buildings, and then comes out the other side of London. But while it's there, it's pretty much obscured. There's all these enormous buildings, bridges, bridge work. It's very shiny. It's almost suspiciously sort of clean and tidy. It all looks very, very nice. Heading in a bit closer, you do start to see, you know, there's some steams coming up from like manhole covers and the cracks and things like that. But there's not the smog that you'd expect for a big, big city. There's an overground monorail which is running in from sort of the southeast, which seems to be running straight into the city. As you're looking, a train's running by. It's a big deal. It's huge. It's very, very opulent. It's moving at a fair lick, maybe with a couple of sparks of lightning coming out the back as it goes. Zooming in a bit closer, you start seeing the streets are filled with people. Interestingly, everyone seems to be, you know, quite well to do. I'm not saying incredibly posh or wealthy or anything like that, but there doesn't seem to be much of a litter problem. There doesn't seem to be many people sort of wandering around begging or anything like that. It seems very, you know, very, like I said, well to do. Heading in a bit closer, you start seeing maybe off to one side, near one of the manor houses that are off towards the edge, quite a large crowd are gathering at some gates. It's a townhouse, so it's tall, it's narrow, kind of terrace-y, but it's not small. And the crowd, they seem good-natured, they seem excited. Heading off to the side for a bit, further down the street, we end up encountering a small girl. Well, I say small girl, I mean young woman. Yeah. And she's... How big is she? Small
she's woman. 5'4". It's not even particularly short.
We encounter a woman. Just a woman.
Yeah.
Can you give us a brief description of what Sasha looks like?
Sasha wears dark, fitted, comfortable and practical clothes. Description sort of slides off her.
Mm-hmm.
She sticks to the shadows, but not in any way that you would think of as suspicious. She's mm-hmm. just not an obtrusive kind of person. She moves oddly quietly.
Mm-hmm.
You might notice if you were walking by that she appears from nowhere because she walks without making that much of a sound, without drawing much attention to herself. She's very aware of you, though.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, there's a larger crowd which is a few streets away, but here it's a bit quieter. There's a couple of people sort of walking up and down the street. Could you give me a perception roll, Lydia? So for anyone listening, that'd be rolling a d20. And what we're doing is we're basically seeing how good she is at noticing things.
7.
So that's a 7, but she also gets a modifier because she's quite good at looking at things, which will be on the sheet.
Yep, my perception is +6.
Giving a total of 13?
Yep.
Okay, so Sasha notices that she thinks she's being followed. They're doing a decent job, don't get me wrong. They're not, like, super ninja stealthy or anything. Mm-hmm. But one guy has been, you know, he's been looking at a clockwork stand behind a shop for a little bit too long, and his angle, you suddenly realise that he's got a very clear line of sight for you with the reflection. And he certainly ain't looking at any clocks. He's fairly tall. He's quite plainly dressed. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so far as to say shabby, but it feels like he could be going that way if he left it a bit longer, you know?
Uh-huh. And you say there's a crowd ahead of
me. There is a crowd further off to the left-hand side. So you're in the middle of the street. Let's say to your left, a few streets away. You're looking at a good sort of 5-minute walk. You can hear it and you can see people heading in that direction. You can't physically see a big crowd.
Okay.
The street you're on is lined with shop fronts. They're middling. They're not incredibly opulent, but neither are they pawnbrokers or anything like that. And he's further off to the right-hand side, further away from the crowds. And there's a few people who are walking past him. No one seems to be thinking that he's acting peculiarly.
Right, okay. Well, I cross the road.
Mm-hmm.
And begin walking towards the crowd, looking into shops as I go. I am not particularly walking fast.
Mm-hmm.
I make sure not to look behind me, but I'm catching, I'm looking into as many reflections as possible to see whether this guy is actually following me specifically. And how,
okay.
So how far behind he is.
So, you see that he moves away when you do. Give me another perception roll.
8 plus 6, 14.
14, pretty much same as before. You're pretty certain that he's following you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't discern any motives or anything like that, really. But, you know, it's a thing where you're looking in one window just briefly to get a reflection and he's, you know, coming up behind you. You deliberately cross the road, you know, stopping for a moment for a carriage to go past in the direction of the crowd and then carrying on. And the guy's deliberately occupied himself looking at another shop just
okay.
to maintain that distance. He doesn't seem to be trying to close in on you,
uh-huh.
but he's definitely keeping pace.
How close am I to the crowd?
A good, like, still sort of four minutes away. You're going to have to take a couple of turns left and right. It's, you know it's there because
mm-hmm.
there's a big, you know, there's that kind of furore, you know, that noise of lots of people. They're not
right.
yelling, but they're definitely there, and you can home in from the sound, if nothing
okay.
else.
Yeah, so I continue walking that way. If I pass... I'm looking into shops, again, checking for the guy behind me. I am, unbeknownst to him, perhaps under my jacket,
mm-hmm.
Taking out bits of my disguise kit.
Oh, yeah.
Intending to at least change my appearance very slightly. I've got a small foldable hat,
mm-hmm.
And I can maybe. Gosh, do I have a wig? Probably have a wig.
A basic disguise kit would have. Think of it as the real basic disguise kit. Have you ever seen the Sherlock Holmes movies?
Right.
Like the big posh Hollywood ones? How he can sort of like bodge together a few odds
okay,
and ends.
So
you could have a rubbishy wig, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a small hat. And I'll have the stuff in there that would, if I were to screw up my face and draw it across
mm-hmm.
my look, manage to age me very slightly. And I am prepared, I'm taking things up, like, out under my jacket, ready to plunge into this crowd.
Okay.
And come out the other side looking at least very slightly different.
Okay, as you are sort of heading in, you're homing in towards the crowd, the guy's keeping his distance, but you're definitely sure he's
mm-hmm.
tailing you. You notice someone else steps into the street, and then after a few moments, it becomes clear that he's also tailing you. This guy is much smaller, much leaner. He's bordering on the shabby, but he's clearly tracking you, and they're trying... Because you know what you're doing, it's quite clear that they are sort of hoping that you're aware of one of them, not both of them.
Right.
You are moments away from the crowd at this point.
Okay, I am, I think, still going to hope that this is the... Since I'm in a public space,
mm-hmm.
I don't think getting a weapon out would be appropriate yet.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to fling myself into this interesting crowd. I assume... Am I there yet? Am I
Yeah. She's throwing
now, remember, I've got Crowd Dodger
mm-hmm.
As a... trait,
sure.
So that means that I can move through it
quite easily.
It's quite easy for me to shift through things and manage to change. I change my hat. I age myself by like rubbing grey into what hair is showing out underneath and into the wrinkles on my frowning forehead. I take my jacket off
mm-hmm.
and roll it into a bundle so that I begin
uh-huh.
to look a bit more small, frail, and slightly different. I hold my space in the crowd for a little while. I don't know what the crowd is trying to do. I seem I'm trying to pick up on that whilst
okay.
fiddling with my appearance.
So, let you know a bit about the crowd. It's a big group of people, like a really large group of people, a couple of hundred. They're all gathering the townhouse that I was mentioning earlier in the description. They're gathered around that townhouse. It has some big wrought iron gates which are closed currently.
Mm-hmm.
It has a few city guards out front. Nothing dodgy. They're not like being mean, like cruel or anything. But they are keeping a significant distance because otherwise you're going to get people being pushed up against the gates. Everyone seems good natured. No one's angry. No one's yelling. But it's very enthusiastic. It's like being outside a gig. Like people are are raring up for something.
Yeah.
The townhouse is completely closed. It's completely white, very, very tall. Maybe 4 stories, 5 stories. Mm. And despite being a sort of terraced townhouse, you get the impression that that terrace might be quietly expanding out into either side of the other buildings. Like, it's probably quite an expensive house. It has a sort of front yard with a couple of larger trees, and yeah, the crowd are all sort of craning to get a look, but there's nothing really to see. A couple of opportunistic people are selling stuff. Can you give me a roll for your disguise checks? That'd be another d20. Yeah, that's a 20-sided dice.
Oh, one. So,
natural one.
Natural one.
For future reference,
critical disguise fail.
That
right?
is a critical disguise fail.
Oh, God.
So,
throwing a moustache on yourself and it's just a big arrow going, here I am!
So, yeah, for future reference, 20, or depending if you're doing combat, maybe a little lower, like a 20 is called like a natural success, really. There are a few situations where I'll overrule it, but normally a natural 20 is a natural success. A 1 isn't just a fail, a 1 is that you've actively made the thing that you were trying to do harder. Right. So basically, you're going through the crowd, you're doing all these things, you're getting a lay of the land, you're also putting all of this stuff on, you get the powder out to run through your hair, trip, bump into a small child, and then the whole powder just flies up into the air. It covers about 5 people all around you. There's one gentleman who's goodness me. Like all these people around are just instantly drawn attention, and it's clear that anyone from the edge of the crowd has just seen this big little signal go into the air. With that, we'll pan out and leave you in the middle of the crowd.
Poor guys.
Moving across from the city, moving away from the crowd, as it looks like a few people are getting disgruntled at this woman, full stop. We head across into a slightly lower rent district. Again, it's not dingy, but you get the impression it's where a merchant would live. Not even a successful merchant. You know, there's a bit more pubs, that kind of thing. And in fact, above what looks like some kind of music venue or something, we go in and we head in through a very narrow window, and then we enter this very, very small space. There is a couple of chairs, upon which is sat Zolf. Can you describe your character for us, Ben?
Am I out and about?
You are currently sat on a chair in a fairly sort of, think of it as an above a pub, sort of dingy venue.
Okay, so I probably have left my armour at home.
Yeah.
It's that kind of situation, sure.
We'll say you have it in the room with you.
Okay, fine. So it's probably hung up behind the door or something. I don't know. I don't know where someone keeps their armour. having never owned a set myself.
In an armoire.
Oh, you're a bad person, and I really like that joke.
Thank you. So, blonde dwarf with sort of a bird's nest style hairdo. Mm-hmm. It was likened to Boris Johnson, although that is thankfully where the comparison ends. And a large blonde beard, which has been braided into sort of 2 long... beardo tails. 2 braids under, like, where the jowls would be. Mm-hmm. He's got a peg leg as well, a mm-hmm. metal one. His left leg, to mm-hmm. be exact. And he has a sort of obvious amulet, which is a driftwood carving of a dolphin.
Okay, cool. Well, like I said, there are 2 chairs, and the chair a little back and behind him is one bad-looking mother. Like, he's sat there, big, big sort of desert coat, like a trench coat deal. He's clearly got a broadsword on him. He isn't scarred, but you kind of get the impression he's not scarred because he knows what he's doing, as opposed to because, you know, he just never got in a fight. Like, he's got the kind of lank haircut, that 1,000-yard stare, and he's just there, and he clearly seems subordinate to Zolf. He's just there, just quiet, just sort of glowering. In front of both of them is a very, very weedy looking 16-year-old, and he's sort of trying to do a handstand, and he can't really manage it. He's looking fairly shabby. He sort of lands on his back and goes, okay, right, I can normally do that, honestly. So, like, can I join? Like, can I be a merc? I think I've got it. Like, I can't afford the sword right now, but like if you can advance me, I could definitely, like, probably be a merc.
I've got to say, probably no.
Well, I mean, like I said, the handstand, I could do the cartwheel. I mean, I could show you the cartwheel again. I mean, it'd be...
On reflection, handstanding and cartwheels aren't really number one priorities for a mercenary. Do you have any weapons?
I'd say that my body is a weapon.
Are you very good with that weapon?
I was hoping I could learn.
This isn't really a training course. I'm pretty sure they run them at the guild, but it's a no. Sorry. Good luck. Go to school, like, get trained, and then come back in, like, I don't know, 5 years?
The kid kind of looks a bit crestfallen. Not surprised, but crestfallen. He kind of looks from you, looks to the thousand-yard stair man, quickly looks back to you, and then just sort of heads out, opens the door. And as he opens the door, there is just an enormous, gleaming, like, almost like a robotic monolith in the doorway. He opens it, and it's just a wall of steel. He sort of walks, stops, and it's just a wall of steel and falcons. And this kid just sort of, he doesn't seem to have registered what's behind the door. He just sort of looks at it, and then sort of back to you. Hello? At which point, of course, we encounter...
Hello!
James's character, Bertie. Could you give us a bit of a physical description?
My character is Sir Bertrand Bertie McGuffingham, and he is 6'5" and pretty lardy, but in a sort of healthy, muscular way, mm-hmm. rather than just plain obesity. He's a very big chap. He looks like a sort of a tall, fatter, blonder version of Hugh Laurie playing Bertie Wooster mm-hmm. In the 1990s Fry and Laurie, Jeeves and Wooster adaptation. And he is wearing massive armour, massive, incredibly flashy armour. And it is adorned with huge falcons, and it's incredibly fancily carved. It is very much how, you know, a child would draw big fancy armour if required to do so.
Is it like when they draw a tank, but it's got guns on the guns? But
it's got guns on the guns. It's got falcons on the falcons.
Okay. And I'm going to jump away for that moment, just for that opening impression of your character. And we head back out through that narrow little window and up into the sky. And then we cut to Bryn's character. He is in the casino. He is in a very, very opulent casino. An incredibly opulent casino. And he's sat at what looks like a roulette table. Upon it is a heaped pile of chips right in front of him. It's clear that they are currently his chips. There's a decent crowd around him. It seems like they've been drawn half by the money and half by him. He's a very chipper looking guy. And the croupier is getting a little bit of a concerned frown. Like he might be doing his job badly and he's not sure why. Give us a bit more details about your character, Bryn.
My character is a halfling. He is pretty good looking. He's got sort of golden brown skin and sort of large dark brown eyes. He's got an incredibly neat haircut, very mm-hmm. clean shaven, very well put together in an immaculate suit. Mm-hmm. He looks conflicted.
Yeah, I could see why he would. So the table has an elderly gentleman, very, very well to do. He seems to be wearing more fur than any other piece of clothing, despite the fact that it's perfectly, you know, it's a perfectly balmy temperature in there. He leans over and he's very impressive.
Goodness me, I don't think I've ever encountered someone quite as impressive. I'm thinking all in on red.
Gives you a really token wink. It's quite clear this guy maybe doesn't even understand how gambling works. He proceeds to go all in with his sort of five chips on... what was it I said?
Red.
Was it on red? He puts his five chips on red and then goes, oh, go on. All the crowd around Hamid are like, oh, yeah, do it, yeah. Oh, my God. The croupier just sort of gives a sort of glance, a knowing glance at you. If Sir's going to place a bet, I believe it's about time.
I play with my stack of chips briefly. I flick a couple in the air mm-hmm. and pocket them, mm-hmm. and then push the rest mm-hmm. onto red.
Okay, I'm going to take that opportunity now to just take a brief break, and we'll be back to you in a couple of minutes. Hi guys, Alex here. Normally we'd put an ad break at this point, letting you know about new developments at Rusty Quill, mention sponsors, or just recommend other shows that we think you'd enjoy. But today, we just want to take the time to thank you. It takes a lot of time and effort and money to make podcasts like this, and it means a lot to us that you've decided to listen, so thank you. You're awesome. In fact, you are so awesome that we want to keep making great content for you and introduce you to loads of new shows, but in order to do that, we need your help. The more listeners that we get, the more content we can make. It's as simple as that, and the best way that we can get listeners is by word of mouth. In the credits at the end of the episode, we include details about how you can get involved online, but honestly, the best way that you can help us is by recommending us to people that you know. Tell a friend, tell a co-worker, tell your pet iguana. If just one of the people or lizards that you talk to subscribes, that's going to be a huge help to us. We're looking forward to making loads more content for you in the future, and we want to share it with everyone that you care about. So thanks again for getting involved, and we hope we get to meet you, your friends, and all your lizards real soon. Well, that's everything for now, so sit back, relax, and let's get back to the show. And welcome back. So, I believe we just left Hamid placing an enormous bet. Instead of, you know, following that, what I'll do is I'll cut back to Sasha. And she's there having just made an enormous... I'm going to have to say proud of herself.
Yes.
A lot of people are looking. And most people are laughing, like no one, apart from the sort of posh gentleman who got covered in what he thinks might be dandruff.
I keep a pot of it about.
I know.
I don't. That isn't in my gear.
But it was in your backstory. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what are you doing? The guys at the edge of the crowd are working their way towards you with a lot more sort of skill than you were managing with your disguise.
Okay, I guess that I haven't played this very much. Can I kind of examine area? I am looking for, like, places, crowded places where I might manage to slip past these guys.
Uh-huh.
Dark corridors and that kind of thing.
And that'll be a perception check.
Right.
So again, rolling that d20 in.
That's an 8 plus 6.
14. So 14. It's quite hard to see, given that you're in the middle of the crowd. You can see, obviously, the wrought iron gates and that clear space in front. That'd probably be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. There's back the way you came, but both of them are pretty much covering that. So if you're in the crowd and the wrought iron gates are to your right, to the left, there's sort of a main avenue, which you can see the crowd extends down quite a decent distance. Mm-hmm. It's clearly a big deal. And there's some guards you can see at the far distance that's just starting to clear a path through for a carriage or something similar.
Right.
It looks like it'll take a while to get here, maybe like another 10 minutes just because the crowd's quite dense. You could get out onto the far other side, although there's a huge group of really drunken revelers who are just kind of, you know, dancing around. They're not like catatonic and throwing stuff at one another, but it's clear, you know, like, oh, why was he born so beautiful? Why was he born at all? And they're all sort of having a bit of a party. The people around them seem fairly good-natured, and there's a couple of guards who are just kind of keeping a watchful eye. Beyond them are some quieter streets. There's still people coming up towards it, and after that you get into sort of more into the merchanty district.
Right, okay. I am going to head up straight through the crowd, using my... I've got this lovely crowd dodger skill, and I think my acrobatics and etc. are all pretty high. I'm hoping that I'll be able to essentially slip faster than the people pursuing me through the dense pack of people. Maybe, you know, my plan will be to vaguely lose them or at least whatever, and then slip down a side street.
Okay. Can you give me an acrobatics check just because of the nature of contortions that you're having to do? Because it's a packed crowd and you're still trying to work your way through.
20 plus my 7.
Natural 20. So, yeah, like, just... This has been ups and downs.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so with the natural 20, you are quickly managing to put some distance between you. There's a lot of sort of reaching up to tap one guy on the shoulder as he turns around. You go behind him and you have your back to him. As he's talking to the other person, you've already sort of... greeted someone like they're an old friend. They look at you confused, and as you go into hug, you somehow manage to make your way past them into the next group of people.
Yep.
In no time at all, you are at the Drunken Revelers, and one of them reaches out and basically tries to pull you into a dance. Nothing lecherous or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He is just like, oh, once there was a fiddler man was he.
Yep.
And he starts pulling you into a jig.
Excellent. I think I start dancing with the intention that I will use the space to move quickly through the drunken crowd, swinging on arms, being perhaps thrown into the air and caught a few metres down. I'm trying to dash away in a dancey style.
So you move through that dance quite easily and efficiently, and at the far side you sort of make it towards the crowd, at which point you see someone wearing an identical outfit to the first guy who was following you at the far end.
Oh dear.
And at that point, I'm going to lift away from you and jump all the way back across to Zolf and James's character. The kid sort of stepped out the way and held the door open for you to come in, kind of looking, hi, hello.
Next.
Hello. Yes, thank you, my lad. And I pat the small boy on the shoulder.
He visibly sags when you do so.
Well done. Nice to meet you, patting him on the shoulder over and over again.
He's kind of wincing a little bit and desperately trying to get out the room and close the door.
There. Off you go. Just tap on the other shoulder and just shove him out the door. I am Sir Bertrand McGuffingham. Pleasure to meet you. Pleasure for you to meet me. Hello, hello. And he comes in and shakes the hand of Zolf's character and the chap with the thousand eyes stare. Looks the chap with the thousand eyes stare right in the eye. Doesn't acknowledge that it's a thousand eyes stare at all. Just shakes his hand very roughly. Hello, pleasure to meet you. Good. Yes. How are you doing? Are you well? Good. Excellent. Hello. Yes.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind taking a seat.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Pull back a seat and sit in the seat.
So, Sir Bertrand.
You may call me Sir Bertrand. My friends call me Sir Bertrand.
Sir Bertrand it is then. So, what makes you... Why are you applying for this?
Why am I applying for a job as a mercenary? For money and for glory, yes, to be have my name echo down the ages. Yes, in the tales of bards and other people. Yes, it will bring throughout... Yeah. And money. Money. There's money, right? There is also money. Money is definitely an element in this process.
This is definitely money. This is a paid... Yeah, yes.
Good.
Yes.
Right money. Place, then. Excellent.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, I suppose, pretty covered. And what makes you think that you would be a good member of the team?
Right. Well, I can do this, at which point I stand up, I draw my bastard sword, I select a table, and I attack it with my power attack.
I'm going to give you a... you know what? I'm going to force you to do an attack roll just because it's Bertie. So you can roll me a d20.
4. What do I add to that?
Your attack bonus with the bastard sword, which is a 4, I believe.
Yeah.
But you declared a power attack, so -1 from that.
Mm-hmm. So it's 7. What we'll do is we'll say you draw the bastard sword, you wield it above your head, there's a big flurry, you then sort of double hand it and just try to cleft it in twain. Misjudge the angle slightly and totally cleft one leg off. Like, that leg is cleft. Your bastard sword is buried into the floor, like, which is wood as well. It's not like a massive fail, it's still incredibly showy, but instead of the sort of wonderful parting as it splits into a perfect divide, it more just kind of topples.
Imagine that table was an orc, yeah? It'd be like falling over, you know, because an orc with only one leg is bloody... Oh. Yes.
Not to worry.
The guy with the thousand yard stare just leans in and whispers into Zolf's ear.
He'll probably do. If we're going to make it to crowd control, we should probably leave.
I suppose you're right, Figgis. Yeah, you're hired. Brilliant. You start immediately.
Excellent. Lovely.
We're doing a bit of crowd control at the moment, trying to make sure people don't get too rowdy. It's a big event going on uptown.
Crowd. What event?
It's Lord Edison's event.
At which point we will cut away to Hamed. And he's there at the table. The ball is there dancing around and the old guy next to him goes,
"We're definitely going to win. Definitely."
I don't doubt it for a second.
Croupier is kind of dancing around. And you can see the croupier. He's got a very calm composure to him, but his knuckles are a little bit white because you're currently betting more than his yearly salary. At which point, the ball comes down. And it is a black. And the croupier just kind of kind of leans across and pulls the stick and pulls all the chips. He's not being a mean guy about it, but you can tell he's quite happy because he's probably just gotten a bonus off that. And he's just stacking it again. He goes, "I'm very sorry that happened, sir. I'm sure that the casino bank would be able to offer you an extension, perhaps, or maybe some more chips."
I look visibly shaken. I reach my hand in my pocket very slowly and bring out the 3 chips I squirreled away earlier.
"Would sir care to place another bet? Only there are other patrons who are perhaps wanting to play."
I stare longingly at the chips and stare longingly at the roulette wheel. And I head to the exit.
Mm-hmm.
And ask to turn my chips back into cold, hard cash.
Yep. The guy behind the metal grill with the chips takes the 2, kind of looks at them a bit pityingly and goes, "You know..." Oh, was it 3? My mistake. 3 chips.
Thank you.
I'll 3 have chips. Nuts.
Hey, that's like a 150% increase from 2. So the guy kind of holds the 3 chips, looks at them a little bit pityingly, and he goes, "It's all right, you know." Starts, you know, converting them into cash. If it's any consolation, I thought you'd leave with nothing. So that's plus. That's 4 pluses. 4 pluses for you. And he hands over just 4 gold pieces.
"Thank you. I suppose things could always be worse."
"Oh, yes. I mean, you could leave right now, and actually, if you were to place 1 more bet, you could win on one of the larger tables, eh? But you wouldn't know, because you'd have left."
No. It's time to do something else."
All right. Well, you have a lovely day, and... remember that Charlemagne's is always open for those who like to have a little bit of a tipple on the cards."
Thank you. Hopefully I won't be seeing you for quite some time."
"Why does everyone always say that when they're losing, eh? I don't know."
"Right. I wonder what happens now." I wander off down the streets.
You head down onto the down the carpeted stairs. Open the doors from the softly lit walnut interior to a crowded street and bright sunlight that's really too bright. Like, really, really too bright. You've clearly been in there a little bit too long. There is a large sort of natural flow of people. There's a big crowd sort of off to the right-hand side. The flow of the crowd is certainly heading in that direction, to the point where you'd kind of be salmon up street going the other way.
I follow the crowd. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see what everyone's so excited about.
Okay, so we jump back to Sasha as the 3 followers are closing in.
Okay, so I didn't lose the other guys.
You didn't manage to lose them. You got a big distance on them,
mm-hmm.
So you've still got time to work with, but they're still sort of trying to work their way through, but they're kind of trapped in the crowd, but they totally have a bead on you.
Okay, well, so you're saying that where I am right now, I've got to the edge of the drunken revelers, mm-hmm. and then there's some side streets into the merchant district, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
I think I leg it down one of those.
Okay, cool. So yeah, you basically the second that the revelers part just for a second, you dart out and into a side street. I wouldn't need a roll for that. Like, you've been doing well enough with your dancing. And you head straight down to a side street, you know, quick disappearing off. And the second that you head into a side street, you run slam into what you feel like is just a wall of metal.
Mm.
A very kind of embellished and gilded metal, but metal nonetheless.
Hello! Do I have to roll a perception check to...
to notice if someone's running into me? I'd say that the clang is loud enough, but you didn't feel the actual impact.
Okay, fair enough. I kind of look around...
To elaborate, obviously Bertie's mm-hmm. there, as is a little bit off to the side, Zolf, and then behind him, the tall, muscular, good-looking, slightly debonair, but also threatening thousand-yard stare man. Whose name is now Figgis.
Right.
Because you got his name in before I did.
I did, yeah. I was waiting for that.
Oh, hello, young lady. Terribly sorry, I didn't see you there.
I think that I try and run past. I don't think I can think of a convincing character reason to stay.
Okay, that's fine. Give me a... It depends how you want to go past. Acrobatics would probably be the natural one.
Yeah. I'll try and, I think, slip through his embellished legs and run off behind because he presents such a large wall of... Ooh, a 19.
19, okay. I believe technically you're meant to roll an opposed check, but frankly you won't make it with an armor check. Yep. So, basically you take a moment, you turn around and see one of the guys has basically come into the mouth of the alley.
You know what, I think I'm going to flip through the legs and hide behind Bertie.
Oh, okay.
He's massive.
Oh, yeah, he's huge.
So maybe they won't notice me. I don't know, that sounds quite naive.
Try and roll think, for hiding behind me.
I think I'd leg it down there. I'd leg it down the street, yep.
Okay.
Sasha legs it down the street.
Okay, so, yeah, you duck between his legs, dodge, encounter the 1,000-yard stair guy who just... And Zolf as well.
I'm just like, really?
At which point you start pegging it down the street, and almost predictably, there's another guy at the end of the street who steps into the alleyway on either side of you. At the other end of the alley. None of them are sort of brandishing anything. They have just sort of carefully just positioned themselves and seem to be standing just...
May I do a perception check to notice the two people?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Can I do it as well?
Yeah, sure. Give me your total plus the modifiers.
Cool. Oh, it's on... 13.
I've rolled a 4. I've got a perception of minus 1. I barely notice that there are alleyways.
So, where am I?
Which way is up in this gravity?
So the 1,000-yard stair guy, he kind of looks to the left, looks to the right, nods to you. You kind of twig it. You, however, are just quietly going, there was a person here. There was definitely a person here.
What are bricks?
I mean, it's not like complete utter fail, but it is a case of you're still processing the fact that there was a Sasha and now there's not a Sasha.
I've seen women before.
That.
Yeah.
I am backing slowly into having dashed past them and backing slowly away.
Can I just clarify briefly the situation in this alley? So it's a long alleyway. One end is blocked by one of these gentlemen. The other is blocked by the other similar-looking gentleman. Sasha has gone through the alley past us. Yeah. And is now closer to one end of the alley.
And I'm backing back.
Okay. We've got models.
Yeah, you do.
Where's Figgis's model?
I think I'm probably about there.
Figgis's model? No, that's way too big for Figgis. Figgis isn't a large creature.
He gets to be a Carnifex.
Oh.
What about that? That's sufficiently scary.
We've only got Tyranids.
Or you could be him.
That makes more sense, because then you have these as the enemies.
Should we have a behind-the-curtain kind of moment where we're playing with chess pieces and...
Oh, yeah, to spell out, this sounds like, they've got all these awesome things. What we did is we found some old miniatures.
I haven't used these for, like, 17 years. I've dug them out of some boxes.
This is the alley.
So I've come running in, I've slid through his tin man legs and sort of done a roly-poly and begun running, and then... Stop dead seeing this guy.
And now
I'm backing this way.
Okay.
Before you guys have even turned around, I guess.
Yeah, I'm definitely facing that way, I think.
Oh, actually, Figgis kind of knows.
Technically, according to the rule system, there is no such thing as the way you're facing.
Okay, fair enough.
You're considered to be facing in all directions simultaneously.
How do I flank anyone then?
Because you specifically have to be. Have a partner.
It's a weird one where, like, Bryn's
right.
It
works quite well.
From
a rules perspective.
The idea behind it is that you are aware 360, what with hearing and everything else, but what you're not aware of is, like, it's when you have to divide attention. That's the idea behind flanking, is it's when you're splitting your attention. So if someone's directly behind you, unless you're, like, catching the initiative on them, then they're technically aware of you.
Okay.
So, if we all just take a moment, I suspect that a little bit of combat might be on its way, but not yet. As the two start approaching.
Do we have a problem here, gents?
No problem. No problem. No, I don't see a problem. Oi, Thompson, do we have a problem? No, no problems.
Excellent, if there are no problems, lovely to meet you. Hello, I'm Sir Bertrand Bertie McGuffingham. I hold up my hand for a handshake.
Oh, hello. I shake your hand, but I've just eaten food.
While this wonderful distraction is happening, I will sidle up to Lyd's character, mm-hmm. to Sasha, and be like, what's going on?
Right. At this point, I think it is useful for me to ask if I recognise either of these. I've got an idea of who they might be from complicated backstory, mm-hmm. but whether I... do I... And I also know that not recognising them doesn't mean that they're not part of that group.
Uh-huh.
But do I recognise them at all?
You recognise one of them. You recognise the one who was known as Thompson.
Uh-huh.
That one or that one?
Thompson is this one.
Or is it Thompson and Thompson?
You don't know the other guy's name.
It's a Tintin joke.
You basically, you know, you recognise Thompson. Mm-hmm. You also recognise that's not his name.
Yeah.
And what you know about him?
Yeah.
He's not the biggest, scariest person in the world.
Uh-huh.
But he's kind of big and scary enough.
Yeah, and he's got three other people behind him in the crowd coming towards me, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were two that I slipped and that are coming, I know, further back.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, is that, like, it's a safe bet.
Yes! So, I answer your... Yes, we do have a problem.
Right?
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Well, these... I used to work for this these guys, and I don't want to be engaged in their line of business anymore. And they disagreed with my employment status.
All right, that
now come on, Sasha. We've all got places to be. Oh, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that thought.
Alex, just checking. Mm-hmm. This is the crowd we're supposed to be dispersing, right? Just round the corner.
The crowd is quite literally, like, just round the corner. Yeah. There is a big flow of people just at the opposite end. At this end of the alley, the one closest towards Thompson, there is a big flow of people heading straight in towards that crowd. Are currently right next to that crowd, yeah.
Okay.
Is it our legitimate business purpose to keep this free-flowing traffic moving along this alley?
Oh, totally. Okay. As far as he's briefed you.
Right.
Yeah, about... Oh, would you leave this to me? Sorry, gents. We've been hired to keep the crowd control. You're obstructing the flow of traffic. Figgis, Bertie, if you wouldn't mind moving these gentlemen out of the way to stop restricting a public byway, stay by me.
I don't really
and
think
I'll start
this
walking
is...
behind.
No, sure, sorry. I don't really think this is necessary. I mean, we're just trying to have a conversation. That's
sorry, sir, we are just doing our jobs.
Oh, so are we, so are we. I'm sure you understand. They just approach even closer.
Well, now perhaps we could have this conversation outside of this narrow alleyway. Keep traffic moving freely, moving slightly closer towards Thompson, just kind of usher him out of the alley. And then I headbutt him in the face.
I might go ahead and say that we might be entering combat right now, so...
Is that a roll for initiative?
With that in mind, can everyone roll for initiative?
What am I rolling?
So roll a d20.
Amazing.
Add your initiative modifier.
And add your initiative modifier, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go round the table and get you guys to tell me what they are. So, Bertie, what was your initiative?
I have 9 plus 1, which is 10.
10.
I'm not currently in the scene.
Fair point.
2.
Is that with modifiers?
2.
Yeah. Mine is 13 with modifiers.
Okay. Let me just roll for Figgis, as his name is. The thousand-yard stare veteran Figgis. Okay. And despite the fact that you're not in the scene, Bryn, can you do me a solid and roll initiative anyway?
8.
8.
I really hope you come flying from the sky like a meteor or something.
Just gets thrown in.
Yeah.
Okay, and with that in mind, we'll just take a moment and then we'll set this board up. Okay, cool. So we've set the board up. It's an alleyway. There is a crate towards one end, and there is a sort of nook doorway halfway along. We've got Thompson at the end next to Bertie, who's literally moving in to headbutt him in the face. Mm-hmm. We've got Figgis in the middle, the thousand-yard stare Figgis.
Which direction is he staring in?
I think he's staring in all of them at once, because it's Pathfinder and that's how the game works. then we've got Sasha behind Zolf, And then at the other end, the man with no name, currently.
It's mysterious.
Who no doubt Ben will name, like, Clumpty Stomp or something.
Good name. We'll take it.
And now it's going to stick. As much as I did that as a joke, it's totally going to stick
Clumpty
as a nickname.
Clumpty Stomp the Thug.
Right, okay, so anyway, yes, first things first, since you initiated, I'm going to give you a surprise round.
Hey.
Because you've gone from, let's all be reasonable. Yep. So, with that in mind, you're going to give me an attack roll.
Yep.
However, it will count as an unarmed attack because you're trying to nut him in the head.
Does it? Fine. Because he's got falcons on his helmet, you said. Does that count as
a
weapon?
The falcons have a combat bonus. It's up to you.
I'm quite willing to give you a penalty for having such a heavy helmet that you can't control if you want.
Fair. Oh, I would have thought that the extra... Maybe it's like a power attack, but for your head. Like, it's harder to hit him with it.
You could power attack him with your head.
That is... I think it's a crowd control headbutt. It's not one that's meant with that much in the way of vicious. I realise it's a headbutt, but it's not...
Then go for it.
It's not a death headbutt.
It's just exactly. It's just a normal headbutt.
I'm going to try and get the turns moving fairly quickly.
Sorry.
Like, we can take time for discuss rules and stuff, obviously, but I'm going to try and keep it shifting. But do make sure you describe what you're doing.
Sure. I lean in to kind of, you know, move him along gently and then whack.
Okay, go for it.
So what am I rolling for
roll
here?
Roll a d20.
Yeah. That's a 20!
Natural 20! Okay, the maximum you can deal unarmed is 1d6. No.
Roll to confirm the crit.
Oh yeah, good point. Thank you, Bryn. So roll it again.
9.
Total melee attack bonus is 4.
But I'm going to give him 30. The gauntlet bonus because he's wearing a helmet.
Right.
Because why not? So roll 1d6 for damage.
3.
Okay. So let's just put that one down.
Strength bonus of 3.
Oh yeah, so...
Mm-hmm.
I've done 6 damage.
Plus the gauntlet thing,
no,
right?
No, it's times because it's a crit.
Oh, craggy. So how much damage have I done to him then?
I think he's a puddle.
The 9... The 9 wouldn't confirm.
Go through him.
Oh, right, okay. Is he not flat-footed? Because it's surprising them.
Yeah, it is as well. Thank goodness I've got all of you here.
So what's happened?
So, yeah. Basically, you are going to be rolling 2d6 plus strength, yes? For a confirmed
plus
crit.
Strength twice.
Plus strength twice. There you go.
So roll the d6 again. So you did 6 and another 6. He's done 12 damage.
Okay.
He's just...
Okay. So
I've headbutted and I've whacked his skull straight down over his spine, which just pokes out through the top of it.
You have knocked him out.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
He's not dead.
So basically what's happened
watermelon.
Is you're basically stood there going, come on, let's be reasonable. Just grab his collar and bang, the falcon catches him right on the bridge of the nose. There's a brief flash of light in his eyes, but he'll never know if it was the falcon or the blow. But either way, he just crumples, just gone, instantly KO'd. He's out of it already.
How noisy was that?
There was a clang.
Okay, cool.
Like, to the point where people walking this way stopped and have turned to look and are now watching at this end. That end, there's still people going past there because there's too much in the way, but here, totally, people have noticed.
If we'd have legitimately heard that clang as well, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. This is echoing down. It sounds like someone got two dustbin lids and then it was just cymbaling them.
So Bertrand is definitely the sort of character that would be in Stomp.
Okay, now we'll enter initiative, now that you're past the surprise... KOing one person in a single blow round. So it's Figgis to start. Figgis turns around, sort of has a gander at the situation, assesses it, and steps into the shadows.
I told you that would
happen. Sasha, you're up.
You're not engaged in fight. This is the problem with having high initiative, but only really being able to be good once people are already fighting someone else.
If his initiative hasn't come up yet, he will be flat-footed.
Okay, so I think I essentially will be... I'll be running around him and coming in from the side.
Okay, so what's your move speed?
30.
Okay, so with this is just to explain for listeners as well. So we're using the Pathfinder system, which uses the 5-foot squares. So when you have 30 foot, that means that you can move 30 divided by 5, which of course is
6.
That. I phrased that as a question because I couldn't remember the maths.
Uncle,
it's been a long, long
that's
day.
That's only 5 squares.
So yeah, so you can totally do that move. Also, it's worth bearing in mind that when you move along diagonals... The first diagonal that you move is 5. The next diagonal costs 10. Then 5, then 10, then 5, then 10.
There's only one diagonal.
No, I know, I'm just explaining it for future. The reason for that is it's to keep the movement balanced, because otherwise you could sort of skip the system by going, I charge in a semicircle and get there quicker. Like, the maths would go a bit wrong.
You technically move through his threatened area, so he potentially could get a attack of opportunity.
Well, it just means that I've got plus 2 on acrobatics moving through a creature's space, including threatened space.
So, but he won't get an attack of opportunity anyway because he's still flat-footed. You can't get attacks of opportunity until you've had your first action,
correct.
I believe.
I thought that that trait also meant that you didn't get an attack of opportunity for... Oh, it was leaving a threatened space.
Yeah.
Well, for Pathfinder, attacks of opportunity are either triggered by something that specifically says it. So attacking someone... with an unarmed attack, they would get an attack of opportunity, but he didn't because you basically came from nowhere with it. And you only ever get an attack of opportunity normally in combat when you're leaving a threatened square.
Oh, okay.
So characters will normally threaten every square that they're adjacent to, sort of in a square around them. If they have something called a reach weapon, they can threaten like every 2 squares and beyond. So
I have that.
So yeah, so that means that you can basically hit him if he's like 10 foot away, depending on what the reach of the trident
it's
is.
10 foot. He's got to move into.
So what would for the attack of opportunity, he'd have to be within 10 feet of you and then try to leave that 10 foot or move within that 10 foot sort of square you have around you.
He's 4 foot, so this.
But I have to have a special weapon proficiency to use it, which I'm allowed to be because the clerics automatically get are proficient in the weapon of their gods. For example, with Poseidon, obviously it's a trident, but you're not usually proficient with tridents.
Priest of Poseidon proficient in 4 sub or 3 sub nuclear deterrents. £1 million. I've chosen my god.
So keeping the turns moving.
I'm standing at the side of this guy, and I am going to flick out my spring loaded wrist cheese.
Quishink, quishink. Yep.
Dab him in the side.
And because they're spring loaded, you basically get them as a swift action, so you don't need to worry about that. And so you are going to want to roll both attacks.
Right. So
I would recommend rolling a.
It's a D4.
It's a D4 plus sneak attack.
Cool.
Because he's flat footed currently.
Right.
And there's a hit.
There's so you need to roll a d20.
17.
Which is a hit. So roll those damage first.
Roll
both.
4 and 1.
So that's 5.
Plus 1.
Plus 1 for when flanking. Yeah, just add 1.
Oh, not flanking.
This isn't flanking.
Right,
it is flat-footed, but it's not flanking. So that's 5 from the first attack. Roll the second.
And to hit again.
Oh, right, yep. 13, so I guess...
That, as far as I'm aware, will be a hit again. Because he's good, but he's not that good.
And he's flat-footed.
And, so to clarify, flat-footed means you're catching a character unawares.
Right.
So what that means is that your sneak attack is active as if you were flanking, but very important, you're not flanking.
Right.
Because there are some things that will say when flanking, blah.
Okay.
Also, it affects things like their AC is lower and stuff like that.
Cool.
So basically, for you, you always want to be catching people flat-footed.
How do I know if I've hit him? So 13...
I basically tell you.
Okay.
You've hit him.
6 plus 2, 8.
8? Okay.
Is it not? Your strength modifier is 1, so it should be 8 minus 1.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So 7. Was that true of the other one as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So that, that was 5, or was it 4?
That was 5 because it was a 4 and a 1. So
right,
you actually
so
did 4.
So that was 4 and 7. This is 7.
I'm going to be honest, it doesn't matter.
Alright.
He's down!
Hey.
Quite simply, he just seems to be sort of reaching for something under his jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And just straight away you come up behind him. And describe what you do.
So I bounce off the walls. That's nice. So I'm kind of running in a kind of arc.
Mm-hmm. Parkour.
I'm a parkoury optimized character. Frankly, that's really crowds and acrobatics is what I do. So I come around the back. You guys barely see, I guess, because it's only as I get right up to it that I flick my daggers. They're in my hands, and I stab him just under his arm as he's reaching for his weapon. So he collapses very quietly.
With a potentially collapsed lung.
Yeah, he falls silently. There might be a slight wheezing sound, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
Like a balloon deflating. And a balloon made of meat.
Yeah. I guess, looking back and really considering heading off and running again, because I know there are two more people coming behind me.
Uh-huh.
But, so look.
One sec, actually. Let me... Okay. At which point, shocker, I need my little dudes.
Boom.
Two more. Basically, come in. Mm-hmm. One of them comes in, assesses the situation. Second one comes around him, assesses the situation. I'm going to make that their turn because they can't just run around and go, I know what's happening around this corner. Technically, Pathfinder kind of allows that. I think it's daft, so no. And that's setting a precedent for you guys as well. You can't just blindly charge in where you've no idea what's happening.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, with that in mind, Bertie, you're up. You are currently stood over a faintly bloodied and very unconscious man as two other people come and there is a crowd.
Isn't it his guy?
No, because Bertie acted in the surprise.
He basically did the surprise of...
So that was before...
Hello!
Bang!
I get it.
Okay.
Cool. We all learned something.
Quick aside, are these people wearing the same uniforms? You mentioned uniforms.
They're not uniforms. They're basically wearing fairly nondescript clothes.
Oh, right.
Neither posh nor poor. The poorest one was Thompson was slightly shabby, but he's kind of KO'd. So these two others come along. They get the situation and you're looking at them and they're going...
Given that we've killed one of them and not one of them.
They're hesitating, but they seem to be willing to maybe give it a go because they're looking past you at Sasha at the far end, who they can just about see.
Okay, at that point, would I suffer any sort of combat penalties if I attempted to intimidate them before I, given that they're a few feet away, this chap is down, that chap is dead, and that's before they've even got into the alley?
Well, why don't we look up the exact wording for intimidate?
Okay.
It has very specific sort of gameplay actions in combat. So, looking this up briefly to get the exact wording.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in combat, you can use it to cause an opponent to become shaken. Okay? And the DC would be... DC being how difficult it is, what you'd have to roll to affect that, is 10. Plus their hit dice, so like how many dice are... Hit dice is a way of referring to basically their overall health.
Okay.
And the target's wisdom modifier.
Mm-hmm.
Which would make it a level 1 comparatively steep check. And if you're successful, they're shaken. Which basically gives them a penalty on their go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much the sum total of it. And also that would pretty much be your turn instead of an attack. A shaken character takes a -2 on attack rolls, saving throws, skill checks and ability checks. What you would be doing is you could move if you want, but you'd be going, ooga booga 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 booga. They'd have a bit of a penalty and that'd be the sum total of...
That's not very impressive. What I was shooting for there was something along the lines of, that guy's been knocked out, that guy's been killed, and they've just arrived in the alley.
As GM, I'm allowed to apply some modifiers. You can do the roll, and you can see. I'm not going to tell you whether it succeeds or not.
Okay.
But mechanically, if you succeed, they would be worse at fighting. You wouldn't necessarily be able to make them flee. That's kind of a GM's discretion.
I'm not sure I'll bother. In that case, the odds seem a bit steep for limited reward, so I might just do it as flavour. Good afternoon, bloody little poor people! And I draw my massive sword.
Okay, drawing a sword
mm-hmm.
counts as a move action.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Mm-hmm. Can I close the distance between them?
Not really if you're only just drawing your bastard longsword. That's the problem with a bastard longsword. It's massive.
Takes a long time to draw.
You can... You can move while drawing a sword.
Which is what I was leading into, is that what you could do is, if you are going to move and draw, you can. What you couldn't do is, I know it sounds really pedantic, but it does make a difference mechanically. Yeah. If you were to draw your weapon, you couldn't then move, but what you could do is sort of the move and draw.
Oh, yeah, oh, well, I'll do that then. That makes sense.
Sure. Where do you move to?
Is my movement impeded by the unconscious Thompson in front of me at all?
It would count as difficult terrain. However,
step round to
there's really no reason for you not to just step round.
I'll step round.
It makes no difference mechanically.
Fine. I think there. That's 5.
Mm-hmm.
That's 10 foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll attack this chap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying anything wrong so far. That's all fine.
No, it's all good. I'll leap on you.
Okay.
Violently and unappreciatively when you do so.
Now, this might sound stupid. I'm assuming that I've got my shield out at this point as well.
We'll work under the assumption that you're carrying your shield unless I or you say otherwise. Okay.
I think it would make sense in a general crowd control scenario.
You would have had
my shield out and not my sword.
You wanted to show off for your interview.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'll often have my shield out at an interview. Where do you see yourselves in 5 years' time?
Behind a shield! give me the roll.
Cool. Okay. 8.
Plus your attack bonus.
4 for the Bastard Saurus.
Golly.
Taking you 2.
12.
Which misses.
Ooh.
It's a... Mah! You give a big old swing, and the guy just sees it coming, mainly because the sword's as big as he is. Mm. Like, he quite easily just sort of ducks to the side of that one, but is definitely looking you in a new light. Lyd, you're up.
Right, that's quite a long distance for me to travel. I guess it's probably worth saying that I definitely think about just legging it.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys have stepped up to the plate, and I feel a bit bad about leaving them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just a case of travelling my 6, which might be... 1, 2, so that's 15, 10, because I just want to be sideways.
Yeah, so that I can perhaps... That's 2 diagonals, so that's a 5 and a 10, total of 15.
Sorry, these are each 5, right? These
squares? Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so...
But if you move 2 diagonally...
So that's 15?
Yeah. 20, 25, 30.
And then that's a bit too far for me to throw my daggers.
What you could do is you can use your turn to move double. So you can trade your... So a move is made up by a standard action, move action... and a swift action.
Right, okay.
So what you can do is you can trade those down. So you could trade your standard action for 2 move actions. It's called like a double move.
Cool.
Or you can trade it for something called a run action, which is you basically pegging it, but that is much faster, but at the expense of you can't do anything else. You're running in pretty much straight lines and blah, blah, blah.
Well, then I think I will run up to here behind this box. I may even crouch behind said box.
It would grant you bonuses for cover, basically. So if any of them are having any ranged attacks or anything, that will come into play. Okay, cool. At which point, let's briefly cut from combat to Hamid. You're following the crowd and you see basically an enormous crowd off into the distance, and off to the right what looks like a kind of sideshow crowd. A couple of them are yelling. There seems to be some like drunken men sort of clamouring to get through to the front of that crowd. And to put it bluntly, passagey little dude, you are appearing about here. And in between you and them are, let's say, a bunch of... because of the miniatures we're using, an enormous horde of horrifying abominations. And there's... say a crowd of people
they're
like that.
They're party tyrannids. They're all painted in neon colours.
Make sure they're colours that are not the red colours.
Oh, yeah, sorry. There we go. And a tank. Why not? There's also a tank. I'm going to remove him for the simple reason that he's literally taking up 6 squares. For anyone who's listening, it's an enormous metal sort of tyrannid... Oh, I'm so sorry.
I can't believe I remember that.
So, basically, you're in initiative order, Bryn, but obviously there's going to be a bit more RPing to yours to take into the situation. So, yeah, you've literally come around and you're seeing that, and you can see a guy KO'd, and you basically see him whiff, like, swing and a miss for the...
Oh my god, it's Bertie! I'm going to push my way through the crowd to the front, but not really get involved.
That's fine. Give me a perception check, James.
9 plus
minus one,
8.
Minus there's the fact a, that yeah, no, you have no yeah. idea. Basically, he's going, oh my god, it's Bertie! And you're there going, oh, blah, blah, chaffing, cutting the wheat with my sword.
He's
okay.
distracted, to be fair.
Got a lot on.
Okay, so Figgis. Right.
Isn't it my guy? Because Figgis already moved.
Figgis did already move.
He moved into the shadows.
He did.
So it is yours. I apologise.
Mine is quite sick. This man here, he's bleeding, right?
Yep.
Oh, good. Stabilise.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Describe it to me.
Yep. That was my move.
To clarify, in this game, he can move 2 squares.
Yeah.
Because of my peg leg. Yes. Does he want to roll a will save? Against the stabilise.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Okay, cool. Well, I've got to give him the option.
Okay, describe what stabilising, what you'll do mechanically and what it looks like, Fluffy.
Yes, so I... okay, so stabilise. Effectively, when a character has been downed in a lethal way, mm-hmm. They start bleeding out. So they start losing a hit point a turn. Mm-hmm. A bit wobbly on this myself. Until they get to minus 10. Once they get to minus 10, they're dead.
Pretty much.
They have to be resurrected by magical fantasy means.
Yes.
Stabilise effectively says stop it.
Yeah.
It just stops their bleed count, means they won't bleed out. They're still unconscious, they're just not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. For me, that means getting a... kind of bending down, getting a little kind of water skin of salt mm-hmm. water out of my pocket, pouring it over the wound and muttering some prayers to Poseidon.
Okay, cool. It becomes readily apparent that the guy has stabilised. What sort of the small knife runes appear to... knit enough, by which I mean the bleeding stops, there's some clotting going on. By no means have you healed this person,
yeah.
But they're no longer like bleeding out all over the floor.
He's not fine, he's just not completely screwed.
Yeah, good way of putting it. Okay, apologies, yes, now it's Figgis. So, with that in mind, let me do a quick roll. You hear a clang. And give me a perception roll. Lydia?
Me? Okay. Yeah. 9 plus 6.
15?
I can do maths.
Figgis appears to be wailing on the lock of the door.
Wailing as in hitting.
As in hitting, sorry, okay. Yes, that's a totally an ism from where I grew up.
I find this offensive both from a moral standpoint and a professional one. Yeah.
But yeah, he's clearly, like, hitting the lock. Who knows, maybe he's trying to get out and flank round. Mm. Okay, after that... The guy who's immediately facing Bertie tries his luck. Unwisely, but he'll try his luck. What's your AC?
20.
not going to bother saying what he rolled. Because, actually, what would he have to roll out of curiosity? I'm not going to say it out in case I... yeah, okay.
22?
I'm not going to say. Let's just say that there needs to be... There needs to be another figure in there at the very least.
Do you mind?
So he basically, he draws what looks like a short sword, actually. Like he's wearing a fairly larger coat and it's kind of a bit higher up so he could get away with hiding it. He draws it and then just, you know, winds back and does a real, like, big slice right onto the side of the breastplate, and it doesn't screech or anything. It just, whong, just stops it dead. Like, there's no sort of... He didn't, like, swing and a miss. He just connected and nothing. Like, nothing at all. He didn't even register it. This guy takes a 5-foot step. So a 5-foot step is where, instead of doing a big move, you just move 1 square. But in doing so, you can avoid those attacks of opportunities we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So another way you can avoid them, by the way, which is useful for you, Lydia, is acrobatics.
Yeah, just being me avoids most...
I was going to say, that seems to be doing the job. So, this guy also will try his luck, but there's no way he's risking an attack of opportunity. 20, was it?
Yeah.
That's a hit.
Is he flanking?
No. He would have to be immediately opposite on the far side.
Right.
Yeah, flanking's a bit of a weird one where it requires you to be like directly opposite. If you were, if you're side to side, it doesn't really count.
If you're there and there, that's flanking.
Yeah, it's if the way to describe it is if you imagine a like a 180 degree line. Yeah, long story short,
I get it.
It's to do with they have to be on what you'd appreciate to be opposite sides. The other rules that will be fun eventually is when we do range stuff and it's like how it covers corners of squares and stuff is a bit weird. Yeah. So he'll roll his attack, which is a formidable 1d6 plus a little bit more. He deals you 4 damage. You deduct that from your total hit points and write that on your sheet.
So I'm now down to 9.
Uh-huh. See, that's the thing with level 1 is that everyone gets quite cocky because you can down people in a single blow, but you also forget that if you get hit twice, you're probably going to go down yourself. It's a level 1's a slightly weird one. It kind of stabilizes in the lower levels. Okay, so that is the 2 cut purses. And Bertie? Yeah, Bertie, you're up.
Okay, I'm going to swing my sword at the one who just wounded me.
Uh-huh.
I'm struggling to hit them, aren't I?
Last time. You didn't roll particularly high.
Okay. I think I'm just going for a normal attack,
yep.
By the way. 18.
18. What's the threat range on a bastard? Is it 19 and 20? Okay, cool. So you get a hit. So roll your damage, which will be the damage on a bastard being 1d10.
Yeah.
1d10. Plus your strength, which is...
So I've got a 16, so I've got an ability modifier of 3.
That's correct. So you are...
D10 plus 3.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay.
And that's 3 is a guaranteed.
4 plus 3 is 7.
7, okay. Okay, and that's your turn then.
How is he looking?
Bad. Not good.
Right.
Quite bad.
As in, like, in half bad, or...?
He's still kicking. He's not knocked out or anything. We'll say that because it's a long sword, it's... Yeah, basically, it tears through a shirt, revealing what looks like a leather cuirass underneath, and effectively it tears through that as well, exposing sort of the skin beneath, and maybe gives him a light cut, but it doesn't actually, like, you know, sever huge chunks of his body.
Significant flesh wound. He's not part of a person.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Right.
Okay, so then on to Lydia.
One thing I kind of want to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
Is in Pathfinder, like, these are people.
Mm-hmm.
People that I vaguely know.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't want to kill them,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want them to keep fighting, what are my options?
You have the option of dealing non-lethal damage with a lethal weapon, which gives you a penalty of... Do you know this off the top of your head, Brian?
I don't. You have to take an attack penalty to do it, but...
It's around the -1, -2 mark, right. Where basically what people tend to do in that kind of situation is use lethal to bring them down mm-hmm. faster, and then when they're kind of... When you think mm-hmm. they're kind of approaching the knockout, you swap to... non-lethal.
Right.
Other people will also just stock a non-lethal item, so for yourself, I'd recommend at some point picking up a sap. A sap is, think of it as basically a sock full of sand, as Terry Pratchett would put it.
Right.
It's like a cosh.
Okay.
You just use it to... So what you'll do is, whilst fighting, a lot of people will take quick draw. You don't need it because you've got the wrist, but it allows you to change weapons quickly, so they'll bring them down, and then they'll just finish them off with a cosh to the head to knock them out.
Yeah.
But
I don't really have those things, so I don't have that much of an option. So I need to just try for non-lethal.
Ultimately, the most damage that you could do is not going to be enough to kill him outright.
Right.
He would need to make saves against bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably in that time, Mr. Cleric over
here... If I can get over there.
if Bertie was to go over, pick him up, carry him back.
Yeah. Okay. In which case...
And she's an armor cleric.
Say again?
Yeah, she doesn't know I can stabilise right now.
Oh, true.
Anyone can attempt to stabilise.
Oh, that's
true as well.
Yes.
That's true
yes.
as well. It's just
I do. I've got 2 in heal.
For me. Oh, yeah, you can stabilise them.
Can I?
Uh-huh.
You
yeah.
can make it. You can roll for it.
Stabilise is basically absolute critical first aid.
Right, okay. Right, so in that case, so it sounds like it's trying for non-lethal... isn't worth it in this case.
It depends.
I think she would try for non-lethal. She doesn't like killing people.
That's
at
fine.
Least not yet.
That's fine.
so a transformation to adventurer is incomplete.
These are people that that she knows.
In fairness, murdering a bunch of people with a crowd watching is always problematic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, there's an audience. There's an audience that's talking to us at this end. So, yeah, can I hop over that box with my acrobatics and get to be directly behind him?
You could. What I'll do is I'll say that mechanically, you would have just moved around it without any penalties.
Okay.
Which would be the 5, 15, 20, 25. Cool. So we'll say that mechanically you did so.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I would point out is that if you go here, you are leaving a threatened square, because if you he currently threatens all squares around him. Remember that you are, like...
So I get...
You have universal vision, as it were. So if you were to stop there...
Uh-huh. But then am I behind him? Am I flanking him?
Yes.
Yeah, you're still flanking.
Okay, cool. I'll be in that flanking square, and I will try for a non-lethal stab.
Should we assume that the flanking bonus cancels the non-lethal penalty?
Yeah, they do. I'm being incredibly lazy here and could look it up, but frankly, it's not worth the time.
Right.
Now. Shouldn't admit that to a listening audience.
So that means that I just roll the 1d4?
You still have to roll the attack.
Okay, sorry, yeah.
It's okay.
I knew it is. 10.
So, what's your attack bonus with the dagger?
1.
Does not hit.
Ah, phew, well, that solves my dilemma.
Welcome to basically all tabletop RPGs. You do. Go for the roll.
2.
If only all moral dilemmas could be solved by ineptitude.
my hesitancy is really... It's really undermining my ability here.
Uh-huh. And on to Hamid. Currently, the last thing that happened was... Oh my god, it's Bertie!
I watch and wait.
That's fine.
Thanks.
I don't know what's going on.
All right.
Ben, you're up.
Cool. Drag this guy, kind of lean him up against the wall.
I'll let you do that flavour otherwise. Otherwise, that's going to cost you so much move.
Oh no, that was my turn.
Oh, sure.
That's what we want to do.
Well, yeah.
Thanks.
In fairness, it's going to take you about 10 rounds to make it down the alley.
No, I can run. I can run.
In fact, how long would him pegging it, how far would he get?
Poor
choice of words.
Oh! If you were to do the run action, you could get involved by your next round if you choose.
I know.
Okay, cool. So you spend your turn propping that guy up against the wall.
This is just an unconscious bleeding dude.
He's not bleeding.
He's still covered in blood.
Yeah, he is covered in blood. Okay. On to our good friend Figgis. Ooh, it's a fine hit. You can't get an angle on him from where you are. You just hear another clang. Mm. And then, as far as you're aware, Figgis is still in that alleyway. Let's just presume he's still definitely waiting for an opportune moment to attack.
Do we need to roll a perception or anything to detect his absence, or...?
Not really. He was out of sight for you for ages.
Okay.
In which case, this guy will go for you first.
Mm-hmm.
Won't hit. And another one. Won't hit. So that was both. Honestly, for rolls that low, which were a 9 and a 4, by the way, for people thinking, they didn't even make contact at that point. It was pretty much a case of them making an over-exaggerated lunge reunion. It's the equivalent of a ha-ha! Like, you can flavour it however you want, but they didn't even contact that time. Lydia, you're up.
I will try my non-lethal stabs. Mm-hmm. See if my hesitancy has... Oh, 18!
And don't forget your second attack.
Yeah, well, I've got to see how much damage I do, truly.
It's much of a muchness.
Triangle ones. 1.
Mm-hmm.
Minus your strength.
So that's cancelled it out. So now roll for your d6. You automatically are taking minus 1 because you've got 8 in your strength. That's the trade-off.
Okay, I thought I'd switch it to...
That's to hit, not for damage. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll always deal minus 1 on the damage, cool. But you're...
Okay, well, my other one misses. Managed to get 2.
Well, no, you also have a sneak attack.
You get your sneak attack on the first one, which hit, because you're flanking.
4.
You also get a plus 1 to damage because you're flanking.
Yes, I do.
Oh, so you're back
fighting.
Up to 5. Yeah, good point.
Right.
Oh, two weapon fighting. Don't you love it?
That was all my first weapon, and then my second one I got a 2, which I don't think is a critical. I don't stab myself on a roll.
A 2 you don't hit. No. What you can is, depending, there are fumble rules in Pathfinder. I tend to dodge them in combat and not really bother. But it's stuff like if you roll a natural one, you're meant to roll on like another table to see whether you drop your weapon or whether like your weapon explodes in your face. And depending how far you want to go, there are brilliant ones for spell failure. One of which include things like the nearest person to you dies. Your arm falls off. Like, they're quite elaborate.
You turn purple.
Yeah, yeah. Someone I know looked like but was not a bugbear for an entire campaign as a result of one of them. Nice. A bugbear is not a very nice creature.
We had someone who couldn't stop detecting magic. He just had to detect magic on his eyes consistently, so he had to have special goggles made so that he wasn't blinded by this highly magical guy. Campaign.
Poor guy. Hamid, you're up. You've seen now a bunch of people try to wail on Bertie. Not successfully. But they've been trying to hit him.
Yeah, I don't know the situation.
That's fine.
I'm not going to get involved.
I don't like your character.
Okay.
We haven't seen each other in like a year. I have no idea what's going on.
If I hadn't seen you for a year, Bryn, and I saw two people wheeling on at the end of the alley, I wouldn't just stand back and go, wow, they might have a point.
What if Bryn was in huge great armour going, nah, and swords were bouncing off him?
Well, even then, I would...
Keeping it moving?
Yes.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Okay. Sure. Right. Well, I do have something with range, which is nice. Which, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I still need to be there. Still far, too far away. So the run action, right? How does that work? How much faster do I get?
You go 4 times your base speed.
Okay.
Which is formidable.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've hit a box. I'll stop at the box.
So you could take a diagonal.
No, you can't. You have to go in a straight line.
Oh, yeah, it's a run action.
Yeah. Yeah, I've hit a box.
Are there any puddles you command the loyalty of or anything like that?
So that was a formidable dash down the alley.
I was like, whoa!
Okay, Figgis does whatever Figgis is doing out of sight. The cutthroats. Okay.
Again?
We've gone back round.
Oh, all right.
I think it's just they're wailing when you continue, so you're like, yeah. Oh, not this again.
And the reason they are is because you're dropping them left, right, and centre. So that's a roll of... No. And the other one? Nope. The first one misses, the second one makes contact but just can't get through the armour.
If it looks like you're in trouble, oh, hell.
Bertie, you're up.
Okay, right, I think I reckon this one is pretty well flanked by Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know your name yet, do I? We haven't been formally introduced.
Not yet.
No, formally. You think of me as Stabby Small Woman. Stabby
woman,
McQuiet.
At this point.
We established she's not a girl or young woman. Or distinct, she is woman.
I think you called her a little girl.
Well, she's woman.
Yeah, thanks.
I've been strongly corrected at the beginning of the campaign. It's woman.
Right. I, in the name of Ultra... is this crowd starting to pay attention now?
The crowd's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay, cool. And they're like, ooh, there's a fight. Are they cheering?
The drunken guys are currently populating the side nearest the big crowd. And it seems like they're all yelling encouragement for Stabby Woman.
Okay. Right. I'm not pleased that you're drawing focus. So... I'm going to go for a power attack on that guy, and yep. I'm going to attempt to neatly bisect him.
I can't stabilise that.
I'm fine with that.
Go for it, go for the roll.
16.
Yeah, that's a hit. It's a fine hit.
Yeah.
So you roll your...
D10 plus 3.
Correct.
With your extra plus 1 for power attack.
8.
Yep.
Plus 3, which is 11, plus 1 more, makes a total of 12.
It's a bonus of 2 on damage for power attack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you're basically, that's why it becomes worth it.
Minus 1, plus 3, yeah. Sure.
13.
13?
Squelch.
I don't think he's probably not dead. But.
So, you basically wind up, you know, giving a little bit of luck to look to all of the people, making sure they're looking, and just, you know, almost baseball swing it around. It connects. In a big way. You can't see through clothing in the curious, but it's clearly in the person.
It's gone in like an inch, like 2 inches.
I'm not going to go into that in much detail. I'm just going to say that it went in.
It's gone in an inch.
And then basically he's very, very down.
Okay.
Very, very down. There's quite a lot of blood. A couple of people in the crowd scream. A lot of the people in the crowd cheer. And you see there are sort of guards trying to sort of fight their way through.
Oh, what's our line? Don't worry, we're crowd control.
It's cool, guys.
Okay. Lydia.
I'm going to freaking attempt my non-lethal stab again.
Go for it. Oh, that didn't...
Eight.
Nope.
Well,
second one.
One.
No.
Do I hurt myself?
No. You know what? What I'll do is I'll get you to roll a d20 and then I'll use that to decide fluff.
Oh, okay. 14.
Nah, you're fine.
Okay.
Nothing fluffable happens.
I just cock up.
I mean, it's a 1 in 400 chance of 2 natural ones in a row. So
then
I think that would be
yourself.
Worth of a fumble,
yeah.
I'm afraid. But no.
Stab yourself in the eye. Rubbish.
Okay, so, Hamid. You just watch your old friend just basically massacre someone. I mean, the guy's not dead. Clearly, he's going...
I cast Prestidigitation. I turn to the crowd and shout loudly, "Come to Bertie and Bots for all your blood-based jokes!" And cause fake blood to spray from my arms onto the floor. I am bluffing the crowd that this is a promotional
Give me a bluff check.
That's some good, like, it's in media res advertising.
it's improv everywhere.
Yeah.
That is an awful D20.
What was that?
Exactly.
Is that a 1?
It's a
no,
7.
It's a 7.
Okay.
It's just a...
But my bluff is 7, I think. It's not great.
Taking it to 14.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people going, "Oh, yes, oh, that's brilliant." There's a few people who aren't, like, completely moronic who are going, "What? Why would you... What?"
This is not a very convincing advertising campaign at all.
At best, this is tasteless. And at worst, this is actually murder.
I just don't feel I'm engaging with the brand.
What you're benefiting from is the crowd mentality of someone should do something. Oh, yes, I agree, definitely. So,
I'll have another go next round.
And Ben, you're up.
Hello.
Cool. Can you?
You've just seen someone get annihilated, and this guy is KO'd.
But don't kill him, you idiot!
Is what I shout. And then I move very slowly.
You could move your 10 and stabilise the one nearest to you.
No, that's fine.
Thanks for that. This is going to be the longest episode in the world.
And I ray of frost him or whatever it is. Icicle.
Cool.
I fire an icicle at him.
Uh-huh.
So it's a ranged touch attack.
Okay, so give me the attack roll.
What is the ranged touch attack roll?
It'll be a d20.
It's your base plus dex. Base attack plus dex.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on 0, but you're against a touch AC, which is normally really low.
Because touch AC, the idea is that it's just to make contact with the person, so wearing huge amounts of armour doesn't actually...
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. 16.
That's a hit.
Cool. Dealing myself... I've got to be... 2 cold damage. Oh, plus half cleric level. I'm assuming that's a... Rounded down to 0.
That's normally a minimum of 1.
Oh, okay. So 3 damage. 3 cold damage.
The last one drops. As to apparently all of the crowd who I knocked over. Yes, the last guy drops. Congratulations. You all just completed a combat.
Hey. We did a combat!
Which is a really great place to
end. Brief addendum, just in case. I will stabilise all 3 of them with my next action.
Right.
Can I make my final bluff check to
try and
persuade
the crowd.
You make
your final bluff check. We'll close on your final bluff check.
I'm going to roll it first and then describe what happens. I did not roll well.
Okay.
12. I'd probably go on about fake blood some more while waving my arms ineffectively.
Spraying fake blood everywhere.
I think at this point Bertie steps over them and attempts to bluff himself because it was Bertie.
I'm going
to
close on the I'm going to close on the impotent blood spray. because we're out of time and we've run over massively. So
I totally made a contribution.
I begin winching my daggers back into my spring-loaded sheath.
Okay, I think we're going to close on that. So with that in mind, thanks everyone for listening, and we hope you had a good time with Figgis, Stumpy McClumperson, and basically and the rest Thompson. Of the team. Yeah. And Thompson, yeah. So, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill, or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening. Ad break, it's definitely an ad break for, like, our own shows.
Washing machines live longer with Cal gone.
No, but we can always fill it with comedy adverts as well if you want to.
Oh yeah, that's the thing, is basically I'm leaving this slot free because...
like a sword, I've got a sword.
I listen
to the door. The door says nothing. But it appreciates the attention.
And there is, there's ball dancing around. There's an ice cream truck.
There
as
is
well.
An ice cream truck.
There is ice cream in the casino.
Yay!
This is one of the problems of podcasting. Is occasionally there's ice cream.
Can we get an ice cream?
Can we have an ice cream?
You can have an ice cream if you do your podcasting properly.